Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Today's title of our podcast is What's Up, Doc? Now, Mark, this is going to be, hopefully, you're going to harken back to a little Bugs Bunny action, but I'm hoping it's a little deeper than just the Bugs Man. So let's start this. Where are we going with this?
Well, I appreciate that. Of course, Bugs Bunny was one of my favorite characters growing up. Bugs Bunny was fantastic. The whole theory or the whole term what's up, Doc, is actually more of what you would call a slang. It's a slang meaning for, you know, who's in charge of this situation? Who's the expert? What's going on here? I need the expert to tell me what decisions need to be made. You know, the other one's, hey, you're the doctor, you're the expert, tell me what I need to do. And of course, Bugs using what's up, Doc, right, in a sarcastic manner to his good friend and hunter Elmer Fudd, he easily outwits the Fudd because he ultimately knows he's in charge and not Elmer Fudd, the guy who was trying to shoot him, right? So that really is the impetus of the idea of what's up, Doc. Now, I'm probably going to be a little bit skewed today because you told me before this podcast started that people like my podcast because they're pretty fun. So I almost feel like I need to be fun or try to be fun, which probably is a bad idea. You would tell me offline, just be myself. But yeah, it's hard when it's Bugs Bunny you're dealing with.
Well, it is. But now, hold on. Now, I feel rather Elmer Fuddish when it comes to the market, right? I mean, I really do. Okay. And so, I mean, who's Doc here, brother? I mean, that's the big question, right?
Very, very, very good question, my friend. Well, so let me give you a couple thoughts that old Chuck and I had a research here have talked through on multiple occasions, many times. And as he states here, you're probably asking the question, what does all this have to do with investing, as you just did, right? Well, the most common question that we've gotten really over the last 6 weeks is, quote, how can this stock market continue to go higher and higher with all of this bad economic data? There's been a lot of press about how much money is sitting in cash, how much money, we've got the recent stats, I don't have them in front of me, but how much money went into bonds or cash in June, because you constantly are hearing people say, pundits say, the market's overvalued, the market's overvalued, the market's overvalued, stock prices are too high. I never like to get into that business, number one, because remember, as we always say, you don't invest in the stock market. The stock market is nothing more than the greatest tool ever created to bring buyers and sellers of businesses together, right? So when people are saying, you know, the stock market's moving higher and higher, you know, the fact of the matter is Bugs Bunny is your stock market and Albert Fudd is your financial press in search of the holy grail of disparaging economic data. Isn't that clever? You love that.
That was
you?
Good. That was really good. I like that a lot.
You know, the stock market, old Bugs Bunny is screaming in your ear and is screaming in the ear of the pundits that they are looking in all the wrong places for answers when the answers are staring them right in their face. You got to love it, right? So let me give you a little bit more detail on this. The stock market does not take its cues from any piece of economic data. Really, it doesn't. No matter what any research analyst tells you about their fancy forecasting models, the stock market is what? It's the collective minds of millions of investors. It is what people are willing to pay for the future value of the business, i.e. the intrinsic value of the business. And they are the leading indicator of the future value of, quote unquote, the businesses, which in turn gives you the value of the market, right? Because whatever the value of stocks are, that's what calculates the value of the market. Make sense?
It does.
So they got all this modeling of, you know, different stocks have different percentages of the value of the market. We've talked about reason why we don't index. People look at the Dow Jones index. Why would you ever look at an index where the indicator for the value is the price of the stock, not the value of the stock, right? And so when you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you talk price. I don't know how many times you've heard it in your career. People say, well, I'm not going to buy that stock. It's too expensive. Or, you know, and it's Amazon at what, $2,200? It's too expensive. It's $2,200 a share. That's expensive. What? That's just the price. And then you can have a 50-cent stock. Well, that's really cheap. It's 50 cents. No, it could be the crummiest business in the world and be super expensive. I mean, Chesapeake Energy, classic example, just filed for bankruptcy, right? You know, valuation is the future intrinsic value of your business, right? So Bugs Bunny is your market, is the collective minds, if you will, of investors who are willing to pay a certain value for the future value of a business. And, you know, the stock market, as you know, and we do here at Nepsis deeply, we really get into the behavioral aspects of investing, right? The behavioral science. The stock market does really rely on such things like behavioral and sentiment data, no doubt. But it's primarily from a contrarian basis.
Okay. There's two things I got to pause you there, brother. So the first thing is when I hear the pundits, right, they're always talking about some sort of indicator, trend. You refer to it as cues, right? They sound really smart.
A lot of them are.
Well, they probably are on paper really, really smart.
I mean, I can't spell half the words that you say.
But then you just move to this idea that it's behavioral and sentiment-based, but it's contrarian. You need to unpack that way more.
Okay. All right. So let me put it to you this way. This is probably the best way I can do it. As you know, we've written a white paper called The Four Keys to Successful Investing. The four keys to successful investing are the investment philosophy, the investment strategy, flexibility, and transparency. Okay. The philosophy and the strategy are what I would refer more to as the empirical data points, the scientific data points. What kind of industries do I want to invest in? Do I want to invest in insurance? Do I want to invest in technology? Or do I want to invest in airlines or cruise ships? Now, it's a bad example in light of COVID, but it does bring home the point that, like Warren Buffett, we view ourselves in that we look at investing in businesses specifically and not the overall stock market, right? So when you think about contrarian, what we are looking at is the pundits are always saying the same thing when things are going down. When's it going to bottom? It's going to go down this much. It's going to go down that much. We don't know when it's going to bottom. And frankly, no one ever talks about what you should be doing when it's going to the bottom. They're just telling you what they think it's going to do. And then they never tell you what you should be doing during that period or after. The fact of the matter is, bottom line, is if your portfolio is appropriately asset allocated in the asset classes, then you don't worry about things going down. What you worry about, or should anyway, from a behavioral standpoint, is taking advantage of the opportunities that are brought in front of you, i.e. being Bugs Bunny and not Elmer Fudd.
But people are terrified of loss, right? In fact, they're more averse to loss than they're motivated by gain. Isn't that fair?
That's statistically, psychological studies say that. Here's the problem with that theory, though. Number one, the reality is you don't lose anything until you sell it, right? That's number one. You don't lose anything until you sell it. Number two, I believe that one of the primary reasons investors are fearful about loss is they flat out don't have Nepsis. They don't have clarity. They don't know what they own, and they don't know why they own it. And so they view their portfolio as this cookie cutter montage of thousands of stocks. And that's why they come up with this phrase, quote, I invest in the stock market. No, you don't invest in the stock market. The stock market is the collective minds of people buying and selling businesses. It is the market where you go and buy and sell businesses, right? You really invest in businesses. And as I said in the last podcast, isn't it true that we want to have every statistical advantage strategically in our investment process? Well, that should start with, what the heck do I even own in the first place? Because the fact of that matter is, if you don't know what you own, frankly, you have no idea where your greatest risks are. And volatility is not risk. Volatility is opportunity. This is why Warren Buffett has said it best. When people are fearful, get greedy. And when people are greedy, get fearful, right? And this has always been the case with the stock market. And so, look, you know, at the end of the day, everything may be going down, and you may be selling something at a loss while it's going down, but you're not selling something when it's going down and going to cash. You're selling something and buying something else that's gone down to take advantage of what? The future intrinsic value of that business. That is what's up, Doc.
Okay. People are wildly irrational, right? Yes. And they have no idea.
Thank you, by the way. We're glad of that.
Well, yes. But if they're the ones who are the indicators, or the people who are the market movers, the reason why the market, of course, acts as irrationally as it does, sticking to your knitting makes even more sense if you look at it that way, because all of those pundits are sitting there saying, you know, this is what's going on, and they don't have a freaking clue.
That's exactly right. First, investors don't think long-term. They think long-term. But if they thought long-term, they wouldn't say, geez, I got to go to cash. In other words, all these people that own stocks and then go to cash, they're not long-term thinking, right? So that's mentality number one, because you've now, if you're long-term and you've now just sold everything, you're basically saying none of these businesses are going to be worth more money in the future. That's not a good bet to make, right? The second, frankly, issue investors face is when they own all these mutual funds and in exchange-traded funds, when everything's going down, you shouldn't be selling everything. There are great businesses in there to own. And so the investor moves into short-term thinking. Now, a lot of people said that are advisors. In fact, we just picked up a new client. The guy says this to me. He says, I talked to my advisor at such and such firm. He says, why didn't we take advantage of some of these businesses that were on sale when they were going down? And the advisor said, well, remember, we're in it for the long run. This is what investors have been taught by the advisor. You're in it for the long run. Stay the course. Stay the course. There's a difference, though, between staying the course in a portfolio of mutual funds and exchange-traded funds and doing nothing during volatility, and staying the course, being a long-term thinker, and taking advantage of buying stuff on sale. That's a major difference. That's the flexibility and the transparency component of the four keys that put you in this position of the behavioral aspect of investing. And investors right now, look, this market, as you know, Matt, went down faster than any time in history, rebounding faster than any time in history. People are scratching their heads. And even novice investors are now saying, holy crap, I could have bought this stock at X and now it's at Y. You know, I could have bought ABC. It's now, you know, at $10. It's now worth $50. Why didn't we take advantage of these opportunities? And this is why at Nepsis, you asked me the question two or three podcasts ago. If you're 100% invested, how can you take advantage of buying stuff on sale, right? And I said, because we were appropriate asset allocated. And so when a specific type of event happened, we were able to sell certain things at better values and buy other things at lower value that are going to have future intrinsic value much higher than the stuff we're selling right now.
Okay. I love when you say that, because that is so flipping important and so different than I think a lot of people truly understand how your financial advisor should allocate your assets and really look at volatility. But you also said something there, and I have to have you explain this more. So a lot of financial advisors are saying, okay, you know, don't worry about the small blips in the market. We're in this for the long term. In fact, there's a investment management platform that's not far from you in Chicago that has these Nobel Prize winning people involved in it. And they talk about this all the time, right? Well, no, it's the long term. Now, but you do that, right? So I'm challenging you here. And of course, I'm not going to get you. But it sounds like you're almost talking out of two sides of your mouth, because one side of your mouth is saying, this is what they're saying and it's wrong. But then you're saying, but this is what I'm saying, which is very similar, not the same. But it's different and here's why. Do you understand the question?
No, exactly.
Okay, go.
So, and this is why we say in our investment policy statement, no one position should make or break the long-term performance of the portfolio. It is the asset allocation strategy that is most important. Why is it the asset allocation strategy that's most important? Because it's what allows you to bob and weave. It allows you to tweak. Think of your portfolio like a machine. Your machine is running every day, 24 hours a day, right? You're invested full time. But once in a while, something can break down in the machine. Something can happen. A company can go bankrupt. The long-term fundamentals of the business can change. So what you have to do is open the hood, get in there, tweak the motor, and get the motor running as efficiently as possible. What volatility creates is the opportunity to do the tune-up on your portfolio, to do the tune-up on your engine. And the fact of the matter is that most investors do not have that ability because they own hundreds, if not thousands, of stocks in their portfolio, and they own them in buckets, right? They own 10,000, 5,000 stocks, whatever it is, in all of these buckets. Let me ask it this way. You know, Microsoft is one of the top companies in the S&P 500. By the way, the S&P 500 dictates their portfolio allocation by market cap weighting. So remember, the Dow is price weighted, the S&P is market cap weighted. Okay.
Okay. Hold on. Yeah. You have to explain the difference between that, but I think people can get price, but not market cap.
Okay. So a company's market cap is the share price multiplied by the amount of shares outstanding, i.e., the value of the company. Okay. And lo and behold, there's this committee that goes behind doors at the S&P 500, and they determine, not the market, they determine the value or the percentage of value of each company that sits within the index. So I'm trying to tell you, this is why we're in a world where I think active management is going to come back, and COVID's going to be the reason why. Because even people who say, I don't understand the stock market, I don't understand investing, they do understand, geez, if someone was willing to pay $140 for Disney, and it's now at 90, that's probably a pretty good deal. I'm not saying go buy Disney. It's just an example, right?
Right.
But there are thousands of stocks that went down a lot. Some of them won't come back, right, in light of COVID. But many of them are going to come back, and many of them are even going to come back a lot higher because they're going to do better coming out of COVID.
That's right. Yeah.
That's the tweaking of the motor when you do the tune-up.
Okay.
That's why volatility is so important.
You just said something I have not ever heard you say, and we've been doing this for a long time, which is some dudes will go into a room somewhere and value what the S&P is going to be on the consumer-facing side. What the hell is that? Dude.
Oh, that's the S&P 500. They determine what companies are in there and in the S&P 500, and they have models that they use to determine how much of the S&P each company is going to be worth, or market cap is going to have an impact of the S&P. That's why, like in 1998 or 99, I can't remember, the S&P, 98, 99, I think the S&P was up like 86% or something like that. And 10 companies made up that return.
Now, you've said that before, right? That there can be massive overweighting in specific companies in the S&P.
Correct. So we do these stress tests, right? So we take a client's portfolio, the funds they have, and then we're able to break it down to the top 500 holdings. In 99% of the portfolios we've done that in, the top holdings are one of five stocks: Amazon, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, JP Morgan, Visa, Netflix. You get my point, right? These big, big names. And then when you break it down and you look at, okay, these are the top three holdings, what percentage of the overall portfolio are these top three holdings? And it's usually 1% on the high side, 1.5%. Now, any successful business that is going to grow, I just want you to think about this. If you run a successful business and you want to continue to grow exponentially, are you really going to rely on a product that is only 1.5 percentage points of your entire portfolio basket? There's no freaking way. You'll never grow, right? Unless a rising tide lifts all the boats. This is how investors are invested. So my question is, if I'm going to own 1 to 1.5% of Microsoft, and it's been such a great business, and I'm an investor for the long term, why wouldn't I put 3, 4, 5% of my money in Microsoft? And if I'm wrong and the fundamentals don't change and it goes down by 50% because of COVID, it didn't, but let's say it did, I go buy more and I reduce my cost basis. That's the power of volatility and strategic cost averaging.
Yeah. Well, let's close today's podcast by having you remind everybody of the Buffett quote that you used earlier, right?
So we gotta go now already, huh? I got so much stuff today. Okay, so the Buffett quote is, when people get fearful, you should be greedy. When others are greedy, that you should be fearful. This also goes back to the Sir John Templeton 4 stages of investing, right? When things get euphoric, we have been telling our advisors for years, while the market, the pundits have been trying to chew this market down for years, for 10 years. And they continually tried to browbeat you and tell you it's expensive, it's expensive, it's expensive. And here we're sitting today amidst COVID, and it's trading at all-time highs. Now, some of that is the Feds coming in and supporting, right? But you have to remember the bottom line point. Investors are forward-thinking, not current or historical. And smart investors are looking at what the value of this business could be in a year, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. Now, you got to do your own modeling on what you think that valuation is, and that's what that's where research comes in. But that is the bottom line.
The other thing that you said that I wanted to highlight very quickly is how much money is not being put into the markets that are sitting in bonds and cash in many places. I don't know if this happens where you are, Mark, but dude, the banks and credit unions are building these humongous buildings in my area. And like, it's because they're sitting on so much money.
Yeah. Well, because investors are short-term thinkers, right, even though they're long-term investors.
Right.
Let me say that again. Investors are short-term thinkers while they tell you they're long-term investors. Is that an oxymoron, they call that? I mean, how can you be a short-term thinker and a long-term investor? You can't. Yeah. They diametrically oppose each other.
Right. And it's maddeningly, it makes you crazy because you're trying to do two things at the same time, which is not possible.
Exactly. And here people are pouring money into bonds when interest rates are at ultimate historical lows. I mean, you can't make much more money in bonds at all. If bonds went to zero, maybe you make 7 percentage points of your money. I mean, do you really want to make that kind of money when you're a long-term investor? And I'm saying 7% maybe over the next 5, 7 years. You can't. So how can you be a short-term thinker, move your money out of stocks and the bonds, but still be a long-term investor? Asset allocation, understanding truly how much volatility. You may agree volatility helps. You may agree volatility is right. You may agree volatility is accurate and good and you love it, but you still can't sleep at night. Okay, that's fair enough. Then design the asset allocation in a manner where it matches your ability to sleep at night, but also still give you the ability to accomplish your long-term investment goals.
Right. Going to sleep and thinking, I have no idea what I own, and the market's all over the place, or going to sleep and saying, you know what, I own these companies. Like, I can go touch that company, or, oh my gosh, the thing I'm recording this on right now is one of the companies I own.
Right.
You know, I mean,
exactly.
I think that is the power of clarity. Talk about a totally different mindset of being able to, because dude, you go to parties. You probably go to more parties than I do because you're way more social. But anyway, you know, and people, of course, ask you the same questions that they ask me because I'm in financial services too. You know, what is the best stock or bond or mutual fund to own?
And ask about Zest.
Oh, is that what it is?
They don't ask about the best stock. They all ask about Zest.
Well, you know,
read the reports.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's
can't
what you've
comment on that one.
but you know, I think it's really funny because, you know, one of the things that I heard Warren Buffett say, because I lived in Omaha forever, you know, one of the things that Warren Buffett used to say is buy things that you know.
Well, I was just going to say, joking aside on Zest, people will ask, you know, what do you think of this stock or should I buy that stock? And I never comment on it. I think when people ask me, what do I think the market's going to do or what I think a stock's going to do? There's no way I respond to it. And I'll tell you why. It is a no-win situation. Now, yes. People would have much bigger egos than me. And if a lot of people think I have an ego, and I probably have to be in this business to some degree. But I don't have a big enough ego to say, you know, I'm going to draw my line in the sand on what the market's going to do or what a stock's going to do. It's a no-win situation. Because if I say it's not going to go much higher and it does, I lose. If I say it's going to go a lot higher and it goes lower, I lose. Why comment on something that is a no-win situation? But I've often said to people, you know, the kind of companies you want to invest in is exactly like Warren Buffett said. I used to use the analogy about Visa and MasterCard during the financial crisis. Visa and MasterCard had gone public right before the financial crisis. And I would tell clients, and we bought both of these stocks the day, literally the day they went public, or right around the time they went public. And we still own them today, you know, 13, 14 years later. Anyway, I would tell people, I want to thank you for every time you go to the gas station and you go to the store for, or you go out to dinner, you swipe your Visa card. Thank you for making me money. And the light bulb goes on for the investor and they go, oh, I get it. So Warren Buffett, Peter Lynch, these guys are the guys that said, you know, invest in what you know, invest in what you like, but be careful because what you may like may not be a great investment. That's the other issue you got to worry about. You may like something, but it may not be a great investment. So that's where you got to get back to getting a little more technical in your process.
Well, and that's why somebody hires you to help with that. All right. So, Mark, if somebody wants to reach out and find out a little bit more, where do they go?
They can go to investwithclarity.com. Investwithclarity.com.
And if you are on social media and you are paying attention to this podcast or looking at some of the different things that Mark and his team put out at Napsis, make sure you share that with your friends and family, because this is not just an investment management strategy. This is the way that things should be philosophically. And share the philosophy, everybody. You know, the more people who truly understand that you should probably know what you own and why you own it, I think the better off everybody's going to be. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time Mark comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And make sure you go to Invest with Clarity and check them out all on social media and connect with all of the different advisors that are on LinkedIn, because they are absolutely everywhere. So for Mark Pearson, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Napsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.